going on out there, friends, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and of course, in studio as always, dropping mad beats, Big Fizzy himself, Kyle Filio Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I'm glad to be here in studio in beautiful weather for Texas. It's a little stormy out. I can see the lightning and the cool air has dropped.
Yeah.
I guess a cold front blew in about 2 hours ago.
It'll be gone by morning.
It'll be gone by morning. It's really hot. I bought a huge swimming pool for the boys above ground, of course. I had one a couple years ago that my uncle gave to me, and the boys got to use it for about three consecutive summers, and then it eventually wears out. You know, they're not worth a whole lot, $600 or so. And so they've been begging me. Last summer we didn't have one. So the kids got out of school. And all that goes into part of the reason why some of the shows have been delayed. But the kids got out of school, and my wife looked at me yesterday and was like, look, they're already out of school for like a week. They're already bored. They're driving me crazy. You got to get them something so they can play outside. So I was like, let's just get them another swimming pool because they'll play in that thing all day.
Yeah.
So I went and picked it up. Of course, they were having sales on them around here, and all the stores were sold out, of course, for the one that I wanted, but I eventually found one at Walmart, and I went down there, and it was like $50-$60 more than it was advertised on the website. So I went and talked to the girl, and you know, I was, you know, telling her, and I had it on my phone right there, and she's like, "Well, does that say online only?" I was like, "No, it says it's available to pick it up." And so she had to go through managers and things like that. But so I was able to get the discount and everything. So now I just got to find time to prep the yard to put up this above ground pool, and with the busy schedule with baseball and everything else, Father's Day approaching. And normal work. Unfortunately, I don't podcast full time. Neither do you. I got to find a time to squeeze it in. So I think I'm going to have to take off one day coming up this week to put up that swimming pool, or my wife's going to kill me.
Yeah, and then the kids. She's going to kill you, and then the children.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, everybody's out of school.
You touched on it. It's been crazy with my daughter's graduation.
Man, yeah.
And then your godmother passed away.
Yeah, my godmother passed away just a couple days ago. A sad thing. She was only 53 years old. Unfortunately, cancer got her. Seems to get a lot of people. But 53, I mean, that's just not that old, you know?
Yeah.
You
know, wasn't wait. Her birthday was just like day before yesterday, too,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
She passed away the day before her birthday.
Luckily, she lives in Atlanta. She moved there about 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And she was able to come down for Memorial Day and hang out. I unfortunately did not get to hang out with her because I was at a baseball tournament in Waco. And she went back home, and it was only like 3 days later. And luckily, she died in her sleep. So, I mean, if you're going to go,
yeah,
that's a good way to go.
But it's been one thing with my AI. This last couple of weeks has been a little trying to try to get everything done. But we're back. We're in here chit-chatting it up.
Yeah, and my baseball season, not mine. Jacob's baseball season, but I have to drive him everywhere, is almost at an end for the summer. So, yeah, I think starting now, we're going to be able to get back on track and get right back into the groove of things. It's just been crazy. You know, it's one of those things, life seldom gives you, you know, works out the way you want it to.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those deals. But moving on, the kids are out of school. They're going crazy. Luke's getting fired up for Jurassic Park. I'm sorry, Fallen Kingdom or whatever it's called. He's been going nuts about that. Also, he's been really interested in, he saw a highlight trailer the other day. I showed him of The Meg.
Yes.
And he about lost his mind when he saw the giant.
Have you ever read those books?
I have not read those books. I've heard they're very good.
I've read them all.
You have?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's odd that you're. Well, it makes sense. I mean, people like to read horror stories, and you're deathly afraid of the water, and especially sharks. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of theirs, which is what all my family thinks is my whole side, my wife's side of the family, and my cousins. They think it's hilarious.
Well, it's not
because I've got. I don't like. It's not that I won't get in the water and all that. I just don't enjoy the water. But the sharks, I'm not a fan of, and my wife and my daughter love them. Like everything that's on, my daughter reads about them all the time, the whole thing.
I'm not deathly afraid of sharks. I'm definitely not afraid of the water. I've swum in the ocean hundreds of times. It doesn't bother me. It's only when like somebody starts bringing it up. Like if I'm swimming and having a good time, then people start talking about it, and I'm like, oh, crap. Well, thanks for ruining it. Now
yeah,
I got to get out.
Yeah. But I've read all the books. It's funny that if I go back and look at a lot of like, if you want to even call it horror books like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think about this till right now on the show, right when you brought that up. If I go back and pull all the ones I have off of my bookshelf, I would say 90% involve some sort of sea creature or some sort of shark something along those lines. Like, I've read, you know, the books of Jaws and all those that Benchley wrote. And I mean, this is no shocker. In fact, I've got my wife reading the Meg series now. Yeah.
Perhaps it's some sort of residual left over from a previous life.
Where I believe
you were
so.
Killed by a shark or a giant squid or something.
Well, I told you that I've always felt like that. I've always felt like I drowned at sea.
Yeah, maybe.
Like you, like whatever past life it was, if that's a thing, I've always felt like I drown at sea in some form or fashion.
I think it's possible. I mean, that's the same reason why, you know, really small children are scared of teeth.
Yeah.
Fangs, you know, it's like inherently built into your DNA to fear spiders, to fear snakes, to fear teeth. It's because our ancestors had to really deal with that.
Yeah.
On a daily basis.
I'm glad I don't have to deal with that.
No.
Any at all. Nothing going on the sort, because I'm pretty weak. I'm a pretty weak fella.
Well, speaking of creepy, we talk about creepy things all the time. Now, this is pretty creepy, but this is something that can actually happen to you.
Is this a picture of you with your shirt off?
No, this is a woman had a cockroach crawl inside of her ear.
Oh.
Apparently had a very hard time getting it out. The woman's name is Katie Holly, and she's a Florida resident, and she woke up in the middle of the night.
Florida, here we go.
Yep, she woke up in the middle of the night to feel a weird sensation, she said, in her ear. She said it was like someone had placed a chip of ice in my left ear hole. She wrote an essay published in Self magazine. Now, at first, her husband tried to remove the invader with tweezers, but that strategy wasn't successful, it says. So they went to the emergency room. Now, there, the doctor confirmed her suspicion, her worst fear. A cockroach was in her ear canal. Now, to get the insect out, he first killed it with lidocaine, which is a numbing agent, they say, and then removed it using tweezers. But in the days that followed, Holly had soreness in her left ear and trouble hearing. So she went back to the doctor 9 days later. And that's when she learned that she still had pieces, including the entire head, of the roach lodged in her left ear. Now, unfortunately, insects crawling into ears appears to be more common than you'd hope, according to some doctors who talked to Self magazine. Now, while there are no recent studies that aim to quantify the icky instances, but one small study published in 2006, the South African Medical Journal, found that during a 2-year period, the Tygerberg Hospital in Cape Town, South Africa, removed the, get this, Cam, 23 insects and one tick from inside people's ears.
Wowzers.
Those insects included 3 beetles, 8 flies, and 10 German cockroaches. And again, in 2014, emergency room doctors in Taiwan found a batch of fruit fly larvae in a woman's ear canal. The 48-year-old had sought medical care because she had severe ear pain. Now, the magazine Live Science reported at that time that this was a common thing. And another case in Taiwan from 2012 involved a man who itched for 2 months because he had mites in his ears, a condition that's familiar enough to earn it a medical name. I cannot pronounce this.
It's called mites in the ears. That's the medical name. Why you got to give it a fancy medical name? Just say there's something in his ear. Mites.
Now it says, if you think you have an insect in your ear, take this advice from the National Institute of Health. Try keeping the ear with the insect in it pointing upward in the hope that it crawls or flies out. Or try pouring mineral, olive, or baby oil into your ear to suffocate the bug and let it potentially float out.
This isn't coming from us, folks. We're not doctors. We're not medical professionals.
Yeah, right. And the National
Take this into your own hands.
The National Institute for Health recommends visiting a doctor, even if you pull out the insect on your own, because the legs or other parts could be left behind and cause infections. Now, this story reminds me of the story you hear all your friends tell you about, how many spiders you've swallowed during your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
They crawl in your mouth and stuff. And I'm sure that there's a portion of that that's true. But this is something you don't really think about that often, is can you imagine sleeping and having a giant cockroach go in your ear canal and not come out? It's like a Klingon from Star Trek. That's what it seems to me. Man, when I saw that the first time as a kid.
Oh, when they put that thing in his ear.
Yeah, the Klingon. And what was the guy who had the fake chest plate?
Oh, that was, the dude from Fantasy Island.
Yeah, exactly. That really freaked me out. You know what I mean? Like, you see that as a kid, you're like, what?
Yeah. Like, don't do it.
What?
No.
And
Ricardo Montalban.
Yeah. You know, I have to say, I used to watch all sorts of sci-fi and stuff like that. And to me, man, the Star Trek just never was as good as Star Wars.
Well, it's funny that you bring up this thing in the dude's ear, because instantly I thought, now, if I was even alive, I was like a infant. But my mother told a story one time, and my father was, we lived on a ranch when I was a little bitty. I mean, we lived on a ranch quite several times, but I was a little bitty boy. We lived on a ranch south of here. And he was feeding cattle one day, like a storm was coming type thing. And he was getting out and feeding the cattle. And there's, of course, little feed rooms down through these parts of the ranch and all this. So he's horseback. And he's going and checking on stuff and checking in these feed rooms. And it gets a moth flew into his ear, my dad's ear.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother said that he waited it out as much as he could in that, because it messed up his equilibrium. Like, he couldn't even walk. And he had to finally get up on his horse, sick at his stomach, throwing up, whatever, and get back to the house so they could, because they ended up having to take him to the hospital and get that whole thing, get it taken out of his ear.
Really?
Because he couldn't walk. He couldn't do anything. Like, it messed him completely up.
And moths can get quite large.
Yeah. With a moth get down in his ear.
It's
like, that's insane to me.
It's one of those things, man. It's just like, oh, that's so creepy.
Well, I saw a video online somewhere where the dude was like laying, and it looks like I forgot how they were doing it, but he's doing something with, a spider crawls out of this dude's ear for them to catch it.
Oh.
And he's laying flat of his back. And I was like, oh, that would be, that's what I need to check out. If Kyle ever shoots himself in the head, I need to make sure that there's not a spider in his head somewhere.
But why do we have a pecking order for insects? You know what I mean? Like, cockroaches are repulsive. They're like, oh, people hate them.
But butterflies are awesome.
But you're like, oh, man, look at the ladybug.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Let's buy a bunch of ladybugs and put them in our garden. Let's buy a bunch of praying mantises. Put them in our garden. I mean, my wife was trying to do this. She found some kind of nest of praying mantises. It has like 1,200 eggs in it. And you buy it. It's like $30. You put it in your garden or on your porch with all your plants.
She's crazy,
isn't
she?
Like, that does not sound like a good idea. I don't mind a praying mantis. No, I mean, I think
as a singularity.
But not 1,200. Yeah, you don't want to be overridden with them. Come on.
I got you something here that I think is pretty awesome.
Okay.
And we've discussed this before, and we've talked about Otzi. Remember old Otzi?
Yeah, the
Iceman. Laura Gegle, the senior writer at Live Science, over there at livescience.com, posted this. And I'll tell you, I've got an underlying reason that I'm covering this, but it says Otzi the Iceman was a heart attack waiting to happen. It says, if a modern heart doctor could give medical advice to the Iceman Otzi, the man who was preserved as a mummy, it said, and look, after his murder, right? A mummy after they killed him 5,300 years ago. This is what it said. It would say, stop eating so much fatty meat and consider taking medications to lower blood pressure and cholesterol. I don't know if I buy all that, because nutrition changes weekly by what people tell you can and can't do.
Cut the guy some slack. I mean, it's not like he just was lazy and not taking Lipitor. I mean, he didn't have too many choices.
And it says, this advice, get a load of this, is based on a new comprehensive look at the Iceman's mummy's cardiovascular health. They used a full body CT scan that showed that he had 3 calcifications or hardened plaques in his heart region, putting him at an increased risk for a heart attack. And they had these calcifications around the carotid artery, which carries blood to the head and neck, and in the arteries at the base of the skull, which carries blood to the brain. It says both hardened plaques likely elevated his risk for a stroke. Now, this was Dr. Seth Martin, who's a preventative cardiologist at Johns Hopkins Medicine in Baltimore. Now, he wasn't involved in the study. They were just asking him. And he said, and this is what I get a kick out of. He said, we'd be focusing on plant-based vegetarian diet is what he's talking about. Because he goes, look, because he didn't have the medication like you brought up to lower it, that's what he would want to do, is a plant-based vegetarian diet. He says, folks who follow a more plant-based or Mediterranean diet, that type of diet helps prevent heart disease. But it says, it's too bad that Otzi had a taste for meat. He said, in the earlier studies, they found that his last meal included the fatty meat of a wild goat, as well as a wild deer, and get this, grains.
Sounds good to me.
Grains.
Sounds like a good dinner.
Well, and that's what I wanted. It said that he, you know, of course, if they'd have brought him back, they said they could have fixed him. But here's the thing.
That they're not bringing up?
Well, no, this is the funny thing. It says he wasn't overweight. He didn't smoke tobacco. Of course, he regularly exercised. And he likely didn't have a high-fat diet by today's standards. This is where it changes, though, okay?
Yeah.
It appears that in his genes, not in his daily routine, is what's explained in his health. Because we've all heard about this, you got to go paleo.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty close keto. To paleo, what he was doing. I mean, this is...
Well, and at that time, it's not like he was making a lifestyle choice, like, I'm going to be vegan. In his day,
I'm just living.
You're looking for anything you can eat. If you come across some vegetables, you're eating them. If you can come across some nuts, you're eating them. If you can come across a goat, you're eating it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he was that selective. He wasn't intentionally trying to have a non-healthy diet.
You'll like this. The researchers that studied his body said not only did he have bad teeth and knees, they could tell he was lactose intolerant, had a case of Lyme disease, a probable case of Lyme disease, which I like how they throw that in there after we've covered it. You're like, probably not. Plum Island didn't build it yet. He said that the stomach bacteria that in it said it causes ulcers also. And he also had 61 tattoos all over his body. The thing that makes it interesting, though, is they're talking about they believe it's in his genetics. Now, Dr. Philip Green is an interventional cardiologist at the New York Presbyterian. Now, he wasn't involved in the study, but he was interviewed by Live Science. He said, I suspect that lifestyle didn't play a major role in this development. So they interview Albert Zink, and he's the head of the Institute for Mummies and the Iceman at the European Academy. They call and they ask him, they want to get his opinion. He wasn't involved in the study either. They want his opinion. And despite the suggestion that he should go vegetarian, Zink says this. He says, compared to modern standards, he would not be considered as a risk patient. So I think a different diet, such as vegetarian or vegan, wouldn't have helped Otzi at all. Says there's no doubt he's the oldest case of vascular calcification. But this is two people. Patricia Pertner is a co-researcher and a radiologist, Bozen Balanzo. Now, this is in the statement, and they were part of the study, says that a medical example showing that a genetic predisposition is probably the most important trigger factor in all of these, like, coronary heart disease, the things that they're finding. So I think that's very interesting. That's not giving you the green light to go out and just eat horrible, you know, processed foods.
Also,
some people are more predisposed to having that issue than the others.
I believe that. Also, I believe that, look, he was like 45 years old when he died.
Yeah.
For the simple fact of him to reach the age of 45, he was an old man.
At that time, especially, yes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so he was lucky to live that long.
Yeah,
completely. Those guys weren't thinking about heart. I mean, not that they even knew, but I don't think diet was a high point on the
survival
list.
Was survival. A high point.
Yeah, that was
survival.
About it.
Not remember, getting your brains bashed out in the top of a mountain was a high point.
He had some really cool things with him. I remember Paul Stamets, the mushroom guy, was talking about he had one of those mushroom caps where you could keep coals in it for a couple days.
Yep, to carry your
fire. Yeah, man, I find that stuff fascinating.
His bow and arrow set.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Dude, I love that. Well, I've got something interesting for y'all when we come back from the break. I'm going to get into something that I've really been drawn to, and it's the idea of hiking and hiking the Appalachian Trail. I'm going to get into some strange stories and sightings and things that have happened along hikers along the Appalachian Trail, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. What is going on, y'all? Of course, we're back in Uncle Ham's home studio. We're going to do a little chit-chatting. This is what got me going before the Elite Show. This is what led me into the Batman and the Owlman, led me into those things, was doing this kind of research. This is something that I've talked about on the show that I really, really, really want to go do. And that is I want to hike the Appalachian Trail. I want to through hike the entire thing. And, it's something that I've looked forward to. And I know it's crazy,
But it's when I retire from my job, this is something that I wanted to do. I want to be part of the Triple Crown. And for those of you that aren't aware, let me start it over. Let me go from the very, very beginning of this whole thing. When I start talking about the Appalachian Trail, it was originally known, I believe, as the Appalachian National Scenic Trail. I believe is what it was originally known as. But anyhow, everybody just refers to it as the AT, or the, you know, Appalachian Trail, the AT. It starts at Springer Mountain there in Georgia, and it goes to Mount Katahdin in Maine. And so, yeah, that's roughly 2,200 miles is about how far this trail is. I'm sure there's different routes that you could go and different ways. So, I mean, you can't really nail it completely down, but that is what it is. Now, also, they say, and of course, they would be the Appalachian Trail group there, claim that it's the longest hiking only trail in the world. So the 2,200 roughly miles is only way you can do it, you know, no biking and stuff. It's all hike only. And you can also read that people take use or advantage of this all the time. Like, they love the trails in all the states that it cuts through. I believe somewhere said it's over 1 million people, or 2 or 3 million people a year use it. I mean, it's something crazy that at least one time. And there's also sections, you know, like one section may be 20 miles, you know, maybe a little 20 mile section or something or whatnot. And so they may spend the weekend hiking. Like, it may be between two towns. So you may have a little 20 mile section and you may just go hike part of it, you know, and spend the night and hike and just make it like your little, like we do when we went down the river kayak. And so it's one of those things. Now, it is interesting that I think the highest elevation is still under 7,000 feet. I think it's like 6,600 feet, the highest elevation. And I believe the lowest point is almost sea level. So, I mean, that's a lot of elevation change. Now, when you hear, you can look up, and I haven't done it, of what all the up elevation that you hike, the up and down, that if you add all the steps of up and elevation, it was something like it's higher than Mount Everest. Like, it's something crazy. But when I said part of the Triple Crown, there's three trails here in the United States. There's the Appalachian Trail, the Continental Divide, and the Pacific Crest. And the Pacific Crest, let me see, what I'm trying to think what movie. I think Reese Witherspoon did a movie about that trail. And then it was Redford and Nick Nolte? Yeah, Robert Redford and Nick Nolte did one where they were on the AT. And I don't know about the Continental Divide, but those three trails, if you do what's through hiking, when I talk about through, well, those three trails are known as the Triple Crown of hiking here in the United States. And if you do what's known as through hiking, you do it start to finish. And I believe it is, if you can average 20 miles a day, it'll take you 110 days. It's what, something along those lines. Some guys, I mean, there's dudes that have set some crazy stuff, but most people, it seems to take them about 4.5 months, 5 months to hike the AT, to go through it. And it's nonstop. And I say nonstop, the greatest thing about it is that there's little towns and there's little houses and everything. I mean, it's like a group of people all their own. Like, it's unplugged, off the grid people that enjoy just being, you're getting back to a part of nature that most people will never be at. I believe that most of the AT has cell phone service. There's beautiful, I mean, you can go on YouTube right now and watch endless videos about, you know, guys that have hiked it and families that have hiked it, like father and son, which would be awesome, you know, things along those lines. There's plenty of it out there, plenty of information on it. And it's something that I really, really want to do. I want to do all three, through hop all three of them. But there's a lot of oddity that goes on. And anytime you get that much distance in rough, rugged country, you're going to get some really odd, creepy stories. So, like I said, I was doing some more research on which pack I wanted to take, and that kind of led me into this. And it's not like I'm going to do it anytime soon. I still have a little over 5 years before I can retire from the job I have. And I don't mean I'd ever quit working. I'm going to have to get another job somewhere else. But if I wanted to quit and take some time and go do something like this, this is when I would do it. And it's something, my goal is I would like to do all three back to back. Like I would like, it would take about a year and a half, and I think I could do all three back to back through hiking like crazy. But I'm going to get into some of the tales of what goes down on the Appalachian Trail. Now, there's all these wild stories of stuff that have happened, but we're not just talking about that. We're talking about things that have been seen up and down these areas, like as far back as what's known as the Snarly Yow. Now, the Snarly Yow is a crypto animal from all the way back in the colonial times here in the States. And it's like it's been brought all the way up. What it is, people think it's just a giant black stray dog. Okay, so you've got to think like when we've talked about the black hounds, things. That's what it is. It is a, when I say big, not when we use the word giant, you throw that around a lot. People are like, oh, that's a giant fish. Well, is it? Or is giant, like if you catch a largemouth bass and it's 45 feet long, that's a giant bass. But if you caught one that's like 10 pounds, 11 pounds, that's a big bass. It's not a giant. You know, I mean, we use the word giant a lot, but so you're talking about a large dog, a large black growling mangy dog. But the really wild thing is not only does it chase people, not only does it chase cars, not only does it chase livestock, but it vanishes when it's confronted. Many people have talked about seeing this thing on the trail, seeing this thing in fields, and it come towards them. They're like, oh, you know, we got a big dog here. What are we going to do? And it just vanished, literally right in front of their eyes, gone. What's crazy, too, is people have talked about encountering it standing in the middle of the trail. You don't know what to do. Do you throw rocks at the dog? You yell at the dog? What do? You engage it. It's gone. It's not ever hurt anybody that they can nail down. Nothing crazy has ever happened like that. But that there's a giant black dog. There he is again, throwing around the word giant. There's a large black spectral hound, you know, but it's not even ghostly. It looks like a black dog. There's another thing that takes place in Connecticut. It's known around everybody through this area as the Village of the Damned. It's one of the most haunted ghost towns in America and along the Appalachian Trail. It's called Dudley Town. Now, this town was originally founded in 1740. Now, Edmund Dudley is who is said to have founded this, and Edmund Dudley was said to be the direct descendant of Edmund Dudley is who founded this, and Dudley was one of King Henry IV's best buds, right? So he was like super tight with the king until he made the wrong breakfast and then the king killed him. That's how the story goes. And the story goes that after the king killed this Dudley character, that his whole Dudley family from that point forward would be cursed, had a curse put on them because of what this Edmund Dudley did whenever he served the king bad breakfast. And that's what happened to this whole Dudley town, that it was eventually abandoned. It only lasted about 60 years and was actually abandoned in the 1800s. And there's still some old buildings that are up there. And it's said that they are extremely haunted, that sometimes, you know, people find their way to here for sightseeing and they want to get pictures there. And that it's one of those ones that when you get to it, that it is extremely eerie. You can feel something wrong in this area, pretty much like everything else that you come in contact with that has a little darkness with it, is you can feel it. You can sense what's going on as it's there. There's another interesting thing is because I want to pack not only my cameras and all that stuff, but I want to take some fishing gear with me so I can fish because there's beautiful lakes and streams and stuff as you work your way through it. And that's this is kind of the thing that caught my eye as I was looking at all that stuff is the thing that kicked up when I was looking on fishing was the Pierce Pond Ghost. And I'm like, wait, what? Pierce Pond Ghost? The story goes this, that there was a fella that was going to spend the day fishing out there on this little thing. And he was on vacation. So he puts his camp up on this pond and that he gets his fire going. And he's going to cook these fish. And he sees a man walking along the edge of the water, probably like another fisherman, right? No big deal. Well, he said the guy starts coming to him. So he's like, oh, all right. And he said, as the guy's walking this way, he loses sight of him. And then he can't find him anymore. The guy's just gone. So he's like, well, maybe the guy just walked over. You know, he really wasn't coming here. No big deal. All right. Awesome. So, you know, what's he do? He eats. No big thing. Does all his stuff like normal. So the next night comes along, same thing happens again. What happens? Guy walks up. He sees this guy walking on the water. Nothing. Same thing. This goes on a third night. Third night. He said this time the guy that was camping there could see the dude get real close. So every night this entity is getting closer and closer to him. So the third night the guy fishing there can see it as he's camped, can see the face. And he says, this guy's staring at him. And he said, it looks like he's got some kind of evil grin on his face. So he's like, huh, what is this? And he goes, except this time, after he notices the grin, and he notices that it doesn't, that he's close enough to see the dude fade, like right there, vanish. And when that happens, that's whenever the fisherman was like, okay, that's enough. So this old boy gathers up his gear, packs up the next morning. He don't even stay a fourth night. And that's just the touch, like the tip of the iceberg of the stories around. I mean, I found several of them where people had talked about, you try to sleep at night around there. And if you're in certain spots around the pond, around this little fishing area, that you hear something all night. You'll hear like on the nylon on your tent, there's rubbing on the tent, and you'll come out of the tent. There's nothing there. Like when the wind beats and shakes the nylon on the tent, you know, and all that, it'll be shaking. It'll be very violently moving. You come out of the tent, like it's somebody doing it, nothing there. You will hear what sounds like footsteps, somebody walking around your tent. You'll hear breathing outside the tent. You'll hear things like that come out in line with the lights. Nothing there. People have reported seeing not just this guy, but other entities in and around this water. Very, very strange, unnerving things. Also, and this is something that I never thought about. They were several major battles during the Civil War were fought there in Maryland around the stretch of the AT that goes through it, a whole bunch. And there are stories of hikers that see, they said it right at dusk, which is always like the time you would, you know, you might see it or whatnot, that you could see the outlines of what looked like soldiers, or they would see like even the spectral apparition or whatever, just like a print, like a see-through person entity in the trees looking right at them. And they were old Civil War soldiers. That's what they see. Some even said that you could hear them crying out for help. Like you could hear, like what we had covered at Gettysburg, that you can hear gunfire. You can hear like sounds like a war, but there's nothing going on. It's just in those trees. There's also been rumors, and I need to talk to some people that about this and get into some of the chat rooms and stuff to see if they found this. But there is rumors that there are tunnels, hidden tunnels in and around that whole area. And it's not because it was put in, you know, to do anything sinister. I don't believe on the trail. It was more like maybe these were built by the military bunkers, like we've all talked about. And it's just some of them have been along this trail because that's where a lot of this stuff takes place. There's a bunch of odd things, right? I mean, there was the remains of a military base that was found on Blue Ridge Summit, an old one there. Then it actually popped back up. And when it was found, that's when everybody was like, okay, so this stuff's still going on. There was supposed to be an underground base in that area that's like over 700 acres underground and like five stories deep. And that's the way some of these little rumors and tales go. Some of them even talk about that they are, I guess, more like kind of like the Montauk Project, to where it's like secret labs and things that are built into these mountains because it's only hikers. Nobody goes out there. So you don't really know. I mean, I'm sure that that's probably going to be where some of the stories come from that black spectral dog or something along those lines. You know, you see something crazy, it's all because it's something that escaped. Who knows, really, right? Who really knows? Now, here's a really cool one. You can't have the woods and you can't have the craziness out there without a lumberjack. You can't throw in a lumberjack, you know, all that without throwing in a lumberjack. Part of the trail, come through the Kentucky area there, there's a story that took place the day after Christmas, December 26th of 1945. There was an old mine, and this mine exploded. The story goes that the miners that worked there were trapped, and that while they were trapped inside, they all saw what they described was a door open up in this darkness. And they said it slid open. And in the side of the mountain, they said somebody that looked like a lumberjack was standing there. And said it was very well lit. And said that this lumberjack man told all the guys, hey, look, it's going to be fine. Right? It's going to be fine. And then he walks back in there and closes the door. And they're like, what the heck happened? Right? No, what, where'd he go? This, nothing happened. You know, just this lumberjack shows up in the dark, opens up a door, doesn't invite us out it, and then goes, right? Like it, nothing ever happened. This wasn't the last time. So these dudes were left. All right. Everybody that was in that whole thing that saw it and he told them it'd be okay, it was okay. They all made it out. And they all told the same story. They all saw this lumberjack in this collapsed mine. There was another one, though. There was another mine collapse in Pennsylvania. Same deal. There were two survivors. And these two men that survived that collapse said that they were guided out of the mine by a man that used a strange blue light and was dressed like a lumberjack. And this is what's really cool is they said whenever these men, whenever they were walking, that they would help them, you know, walk along and they would touch the walls of the mine as they were making their way for, you know, stability and all this, that the light appeared to be like a light or I'm sorry, a life, like have a life of its own, and that it would flash crazy images of different, almost like holographic images, but it would flash crazy things. And they said that whenever he finally got them to where they knew they could get out, where they could see the opening, where they could get out, they turned around and the light just faded out. The dude was gone. No more lumberjack. So this lumberjack is up and around that whole area on the trail. There's even a story that back in 2011, there was a fella on a hiking trip and that he had set up his tent and got his whole camp set up, and that he somehow that he's laying there in his tent, got the fire going, he looks out and said that as he's staring at the fire, a man steps up out of the darkness, just appears laying there, just, and this dude's just standing right by the fire, except he noticed that the dude wasn't beside it but standing in it. The guy stepped all the way up and stood in the center of his fire, staring at him, and that this guy's clothes was on fire, this whole thing. And the dude jumps up and he's like, bro, what, you know, what's going on, man? Let me help you. What's happened? And the dude's just standing there staring at him, burning, standing in his campfire. So this dude freaks. You know, this guy panics. The guy's just standing there on fire in his camp. This camping dude, he just takes off, right? He's heading back out of there. He runs. He finds a road. He gets on the road. Now, the story goes that the guy, so I'm assuming the dude wasn't too far away from the road from where he parked, right? He just ran out for some help. But the story goes that as he ran out to the road looking to get some help, that he saw flashing lights, like he saw police and fire and all this, and that he ran down the road to them where he saw those lights. And when he got down there, he found some of the firemen standing out there all talking, and that the fire people there had told him that they had recently been a house fire. And he says, dude, there is one of the victims is right here. One of the guys that was in the fire is right at my camp and he was on fire. And the guy's like, nah, man, that ain't possible. He's like, everybody in this house fire burned alive. So they go back to the guy's camp. They go back there to find him. Guess what? That dude ain't there. There's not even any nothing on the ground. It doesn't even look like anybody walked up. Nothing. It's like this guy just, it's like he had some kind of crazy hallucination. And the fire dudes are like, we don't know what you saw, but you didn't see one of these guys. And he's like, no, I'm telling you, this was a grown man that stepped up and stood in my fire. And he was on fire while he stood there. Now, I don't know about y'all, but that would really knock the fun out of a camping trip with a burning dude standing there. Now, here has got to be one of the awesome, awesome stories, maybe one of my most favorite ones. It is about Spearfinger. Spearfinger, you got to think about it. What was that? James Bond? So Spearfinger is a Cherokee legend, okay? And it started around Tennessee and North Carolina. It's really interesting because it has different. I like the way the whole story goes, because the coolest thing is she's made of stone. It's a woman. She has these extra long fingers. I'm picturing kind of like Edward Scissorhands. I'm picturing Edward Scissorhands, but made out of rock. And that she roams all day and all night, and she uses these fingers, and she tears open the stomachs of these victims of hers, and she eats their liver. That's what Spearfinger does. Now, there's a story, and I'm going to read you this story that's written by Amanda Friedman and Meredith Johnson about the Cherokee legend of Spearfinger and the story that they tell. And it's really interesting. I don't know if you know what kind of validity it has, but it's a fun story. It goes a little bit like this. People still hear shrieks in the mountains, like the cackling of the notorious one who, once upon a time, could appear in any shape she wished. Spearfinger was her name, and she was a master of disguise. She could look like your friend, like a fish or a bird or a mouse, or like the kindest person you'd ever known. But beneath those many disguises, she was a monster whom no one could harm. Arrows, knives, and rocks bounced off her body, for it was made of stone, and parents warned their children, "Stay in the lodge," they said. Utlunta, for that is what they called her, is on the trail looking for children just like you. But children do not always listen. She was most dangerous in the autumn, for those were the days when she could finally walk out of the mountains hidden in smoke from the brush fires and bonfires. One day, late in October, out of that smoke she appeared, disguised as an old woman. "Please help. I need rest," she said to a group of children sitting around a smoky fire. And no one knew that beneath her blowing cape, she hid her dangerous stone finger. The children saw only a withered old woman, and naturally they offered her a seat. And then she smiled at a little girl. "Sit on my lap, and I will brush your hair," she said. The innocent girl sat upon her lap, and then, with her special stone finger, Spearfinger stabbed the child's side. The girl never felt a thing. Later, the girl walked home, and that night she grew very sick. Then the villagers knew Spearfinger had struck again. The next day, a little boy fell, and a kindly old woman swooped in and said, "Come to me, and I will kiss your pain away." The little boy ran into the woman's arms, never suspecting that this was Spearfinger. Sometimes, after she had attacked a child, she took on that child's appearance. She skipped home, and there in the lodge she stayed until dark, when she could attack other children before she disappeared back into the mountains. When one village was warned, Spearfinger hurled boulders onto other boulders and created bridges from one mountain to the next. She traveled across the land this way, striking villages when they did not expect her. Now and then a hunter would spot her up in the mountain peaks, eagles her only companion soaring overhead, but no one could stop her. And month after month, year after year, she struck at the children. At long last, the people called a grand council. "We must stop her," they agreed, and the medicine men spoke. "She comes in disguise, and she is drawn to smoke, and she sings, and her flesh is stone. There was only one way to catch her. We will dig a pit, and we will cover it with brush, and we will chase her until she falls into our trap." "And then what?" asked the people. "Somehow we will find a way to rid ourselves of her forever," the medicine man answered. And so they made a huge bonfire, and sure enough, when Spearfinger saw the smoke, she cackled and came down into the village, leaving a trail of stone and scattered brush in her wake. When the medicine man saw her coming, they cried to the young men, "Run! She must chase you." "But that isn't her," one young man said. "That's only an old woman." Some said they'd recognized her, and they were confused. "She looks helpless," they protested, standing still. One of the medicine men threw his spear, and when it hit her stone body, it shattered. Then the young men understood that this was no human being. Spearfinger shrieked and wagged her stone finger at them. Then she rushed forward. The young men ran, and Spearfinger chased them. And just as the medicine man had planned, she did not see the pit, and so she fell howling as she slid into the bottom. She was trapped in the pit, and everyone shot arrows at her, but nothing could pierce her flesh. "I'll get you, all of you," she screamed, as she collected all the spears and arrows and began to climb out of the pit. "What will we do?" the people wailed. That's when the birds came. Only two, the titmouse and the chickadee. They flew through the smoke, and the people called out, "How do we kill her?" And the titmouse sang, "Un, un, un, un." And the villagers thought it was singing heart, so they aimed at the place that they thought her heart must be. Spearfinger laughed as the arrows bounced off her chest. "Liars!" the warriors cried at the titmouse, and struck at it. The titmouse flew away and vanished forever. But the chickadee flew to the witch's hand, and there it sang. So the people aimed at the hand, and true enough, that was where Spearfinger's heart was. One more howl, and the people watched as Spearfinger sank to the ground, dead at last. Way up in the mountains, another creature made of stone, Stone Skin, heard Spearfinger's shriek echoing off every peak, and later, when he saw her hand impaled upon a post, he knew what had happened. And he also understood that he too had been warned, but he only shrugged. Today, the Cherokee honor the Chickadee, calling it Tiskili, or Truth Teller. But sometimes, on a chilly, misty night in October, if you listen closely, you will hear a shriek coming from the mountains, and you must wonder if the sound come from Stone Skin, and if he will strike again, and where. So there's your little story about old Stone for Spearfinger and Stone Skin, all this crazy stuff. But there's another one that's been out here on this whole AT trail. And this might be the favorite name of all, the Snallygaster. The Snallygaster. Yeah, that's right. You heard it right. This was one of those that's so much in American folklore that it's said that President Roosevelt even had some groups of people gone out trying to capture this thing. I believe we've talked about the Snallygaster in the past, but to bring everybody up to speed, this is what it's said to be. It's a reptile. It's a cross between that and a bird. They say it has an alligator head. The beak of this thing is filled with teeth. It's got big talons on it like a hawk, and it has a 25-foot wingspan. They also say it's super fast. It has poisonous breath when the Snallygaster can breathe on you, and that it can drain the blood of its victims like a vampire. So it's a giant half alligator, half hawk, 25-foot wingspan vampire. That sounds pretty awesome. Now, the stories go that it actually started from German settlers in the 1730s when they had claimed that they had this giant Snallygaster was getting after, which makes you wonder if this is an exaggeration of maybe the Mothman or maybe of the Owlman or maybe something along those lines. But either way, this is another thing that's been seen or claimed to have been in the area of where the AT goes through. It's up in that part through history. But I'm going to tell you a story about supposed to be a phantom on this Appalachian Trail. The story goes that in 1972, in the early spring of 1972, there was a hiker on the AT, and he was walking along, just strolling down through there, and he says that he'd saw what he could only describe as somebody like a time slip, like somebody that just didn't fit into where he was at. It starts off with fog. And like we've always talked about, anytime there's fog, it's like that's a bad thing. So anytime when you're out in the woods and a fog starts blowing in, that's the veil as it's kind of overtaking and overshadowing that veil. So the story goes that as he was walking, he looks up in the trail ahead of him and he sees this fella kind of staggering around, looking down like he had, you know, something he had dropped. So this fella had a big, heavy coat on, big hat. So the guy starts walking up to him and, you know, he's kind of watching this guy walk and look and walk and look. And as he gets there, the hiker kind of walks around him. He said they're real close to each other. And he says that at this point in time is when this man that doesn't look like he should even be there looks straight up and right at him. And he's got these piercing, pale blue eyes. And he said he's got this thousand yard stare looking right through him. And he goes, that's when I realized, this guy talking, that the clothes he had on did not fit the clothes that even in the 70s that you'd be wearing while you're out hiking. So the guy tries to talk to him. Maybe he's just an old fella, right? So he starts talking to him. He said the dude doesn't respond at all. just stares at him, stares through him, basically. So this guy says, man, I'm getting out of here. So he just, you know, he walks a little bit looking back at the guy. He gets about 20 or 30 foot down the path past him, turns around and looks. The dude's gone. Never saw the guy again. Completely gone. They also talk about, like we've talked about many times before, and this isn't so much as like the third man effect, but it's like they feel something evil coming. And there was a story of a couple that had was in the southern part of the AT there in Virginia, and that they were hiking when they had felt like there was like a dark, almost like shadow beings were following them along the trail. And I'm sure when you get out there and you've been out there for a while, your mind can start playing tricks on you. And you can start seeing things that may not really be there, or they might be there. I mean, we don't know. I mean, I've never experienced it on the trail, and I'm assuming most of y'all haven't. I mean, I'm sure there's some of y'all that have hiked the AT. Some of you may have even thru-hiked the AT. I would be interested in knowing, because like I said, I still want to plan to go do all this. But you have to imagine that this ever-impending doom this couple reports on, like they felt like there were figures in the woods around them that they could see. And it's not like what he said, like you could tell they were people, but then they weren't. They weren't like physical beings. And this whole thing was going on. But that the whole time they were there, they felt like they were being watched, which makes you start thinking of Bigfoot, too. Like if you can't really make it like a man, is it a tree peeking Bigfoot? Is he following you? Is a group of them following you when you're out in the middle of this area? But I think something even crazier had gone down, that in 1988, there was a fella hiking along that's really, really unnerving. He said he was on the trail and he noticed that there was a bright light coming right beside him in the forest. You know, it was coming out of there. So he said he didn't want to bother anybody, right? So he didn't go investigate anything. So he was going to set his camp up. So he said he just sets it up. He's like, I'm not going over there. I'm just going to pop my camp up right here. He goes, and in the middle of the night, he gets this strange feeling. Now, this guy's camping in his hammock, which is what I love to do. So he wakes up and this dude is standing right next to him in his hammock, just standing there staring at him in the middle of the night. So this dude freaks out, right? He's like, what are you doing? And the guy beside him just took off. And as he took off, he starts yelling out into the woods. As he's running, this guy runs off. He yells out in the woods. So the dude that was getting washed is freaked out. He's like, what's this guy doing standing beside me? And what was he doing? Who's he yelling at as he ran off? So in the middle of the night, this dude packs up his stuff, which you can only imagine how unnerving that would be, is trying not to turn your back, packs up all of his stuff, and he takes off. He just starts hiking again in the dark. And it goes that he just kept hiking, that he hiked for several days to try to put as much distance in that place where he was at and you know, himself as he could. And so he goes on, and like I said, for several days. About 2 days after, you know, he goes on all this hiking, he decides, you know what, I'm going to pick another good spot, and I'm just going to kind of just relax, maybe even take a day off. So he sets up his camp, gets his hammock out, does all that stuff, gets in hammock, goes right to sleep, right? Just like he did last time. Nothing crazy is going on at this point. He wakes up when he hits the ground. I'm like, oh, he fell out of his hammock. No. Whatever this was, cuts the hammock, ties him up in it, and starts dragging him. It drug him, and I say it, people, drug him somewhere, then started beating on this guy and beat the hell out of him and pretty much put the boot on him, roughed him up. He never does say if they stole anything. Like if it was just people trying, but he's like, it was more than one. It beat on him pretty good. The guy ends up getting out of the hammock. Either it's tied, I don't know if he cut his way out, tore his way out, forced his, however it was, gets out, takes off running down the trail. So you have to imagine. Now, we don't know if he's a through hiker. He may have just been staying the night, you know, in a few days and just making like a weekend of it. But he ends up getting back to the main road, going and reporting this to the police in the area. They can't help him. Like they go look around and they're like, man, how are we going to find anybody? You know, they go, if you didn't see anybody and all this. So they go in, start making inquiries. They start asking people. They do all that they can do. But if you don't see anybody and nobody can, there's no proof of anything other than you getting beaten. They don't have a bunch of their stuff or your stuff stolen. You know, all your stuff's just there. I mean, you can only imagine. Nor, like I said, too. Now, this was in 88. I mean, I'm sure they could go deeper and start looking for DNA on knuckles and under fingernails and stuff like that if you could get it soon enough. But imagine what that would be like if you've just been taken advantage of in the woods, beat up and roughed up and pretty much, you know, aside from anything really bad happening, you know, I mean, it's about the worst as it can happen. And there's nothing they can really do for you. So I got to looking around and trying to find some really wild stories of some stuff that had happened to people that had hiked it recently. And I found one from a guy on Reddit, and it's a strange story. But it's interesting. I mean, this is a really interesting. It took place in 1997, and he points out that he was a southbounder. Now, for those that are unfamiliar, southbounder is exactly what it sounds like. He started north and went south. So he started from Mount Katahdin in Maine and went south into Georgia. And he says that I can tell you that somewhere between the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Smokies, there was some really weird stuff going on. He says, I hiked with a few friends most of the way, but there were times where one or two of us would decide we wanted to blue blaze a section and the others didn't. So we would usually arrange to meet up in the next nearest town or the campground. Now, before I go any further, I'm going to tell y'all what blue blaze is. Blue blaze is a term. There's several different terms that you're going to, as hikers, using. Like white blazing is you take the original trail. There's like white marks, hash marks, and, you know, different signs. Blue blazing is like a side trail. There's trails that are there. There's little go-to, like points of interest, you would say, that might be a good lookout, that might be a little offshoot that you can go over here. Like, if you want to go check it out, you can blue blaze the trail down here. And if not, you know, you can go back here. There's even a thing that's called yellow blazing, which is, it's like a little section of, it's supposed to be, it's like the yellow lines on a road is what it's named for. And like I said, there's a bunch of stuff. Like when I told you northbound and southbound, there's a lot of different little terms that they use. But blue blazing is basically a side path is what it means. You've taken a side road or the side trail. So when this guy's talking about coming down here and blue blazing it in this one section, he's just talking about, you know, breaking off. They're going to go blue blaze here and, you know, and all this. And the others didn't. So that's what they're going to end up doing. So like he said, you know, he's hiking with his buddies, blue blazing. Here we go. Says the thing that's so crazy is that by southbounding, we had to start later than the northbounders. Says because the trailhead in Maine isn't open as early as the trailhead in Georgia, probably due to weather. Says so by the time we reached southern VA, Vermont, they said we had passed the majority of the northbounders. Okay. So I say Vermont, Virginia. So what I say, Vermont? Yeah. So he's talking about, you know, you're passing all this. So you're as you meet him. And I had heard an interview given by a guy that was a southbounder. I'm trying to think what year he hiked it. But he was like everybody, most the majority of all the people that through hike it go south to north. And going north to south is kind of like an anomaly. And people get excited when they see southbounders. And I think that's funny that they have this whole thing in there. But he says, my friends decided to blue blaze a section of trail just north of the Virginia's border. And I decided to stay on the trail, on the main trail. He says, so they were 2 days late to meet up at the next campground. So he says, when they got there, that they were not the same. So they break apart and, you know, they should be keeping the same pace. And he says, but they didn't. And 2 days later, they show up and something had happened. Something bad had happened to these people. He says that they weren't talkative at all. He said, I don't mean like, no, he's like not quiet in that we've been on the trail for 2.5 months, you know, so we don't have, this is what he says. And I really like this. He goes, we don't have the pop culture just leaking out of our brains anymore. He's like, you know, that kind of stuff. He goes, it was just the kind of quiet that was uncomfortable. Like you could feel a tension in this. Said, so one of his friends decided that when they hit the next town, this is a lady, says that she was going to be getting on a bus and she was going home. She was done with the hike. She was finished. So you got to imagine, you know, you're thinking halfway, right? So that's exactly what she did. So they left. He said the other friend never talked about what happened out there when they took the side trail. Never. He said, but that moment on, he was really like fidgety and jumpy, and you couldn't leave him alone in the dark. He would panic and freak out. So I said that this other dude and him, he said, well, hey, we finished the trail together. He said, but separately. He goes, like, we would walk, but we wouldn't talk for, you know, a lot while we were doing that. And he goes, so when we finally finished it, because we didn't talk for a long time. You know, you would think that you'd spend that much time. And if you do any research in this and you get guys that hike the trail and you just kind of become trail friends, and those are the people you hike with, those become good friends of yours because you spend months day after day after day with them. So he's like, but we quit talking. He and I finally finished the trail, not speaking much the whole time. And then that was, you know, that was it. We didn't talk for a long time after that. So they both finished, but he's like, I started walking, he started walking, and we just walked away from each other. He says, roughly 8 years later, you're going to like this, we bumped into each other at the funeral of the girl who left the trail. He says he was crazy. He kept saying this. It told me I would be second, and it promised it would see us again. And then he said, and it found her. I'm next. That's what it said. He says, that's what he was saying. And it really, really freaked me out. He said, especially because there was a drastic change in this friend of mine. Said before he was outgoing and adventurous. And because of that side trip, he had turned extremely paranoid and extremely introverted. And he goes, here's the oddest thing. The very next year, under very mysterious circumstances, he passed away. He said, now I've almost, like razor's thin, almost went with him on that trip on that side trail. And he goes, now I'm thinking that if I would have gone, I too would have died. Now, that is very, what do you reckon that they found? Like, that sounds almost like they ran into some sort of dark arts thing. Like, you're talking about like a djinn out there. I mean, something is very disturbing, whatever it ran into. And it said, it told me I would be second. It promised it would see us again. It found her. Like, what is out there on the trail off that one side path? I would be interested to know exactly which side path it was that they went on. But there's another one written by Spanky Girl wrote this. They said, I lived in Virginia for a few years, and my then girlfriend, Jen, you know, with my then girlfriend, Jen, said, we're both outdoorsy people, so we often explored the area and tried out new places to hike and canoe and kayak and etc. Says Jen was a little obsessed with the idea of some day hiking at the AT because she had a couple of friends who had raved about it. However, since she was tied down in a rigorous internship, she then got the idea to do an overnight instead, since we lived in close proximity to the trail. Well, when our schedules magically aligned for a few days, she got the idea to do the AT overnight and she couldn't be talked out of it. So since we decided to do this on a whim, we were admittedly pretty disorganized in our preparation. It took us a while to get ready, and I was starting to feel rushed because it was late afternoon by the time we got the car and the bags and our dogs. We still had to drive a ways to get to the closest trailhead, and I worried about getting dark before we'd found a spot to go, you know, set up our camp. So it wasn't the best start. So I said we arrived at the trailhead right before sunset. It was a large gravel parking lot across a small highway from some businesses. And to our dismay, there was a guy in a red car right next to ours, engine running, but he was just sitting there doing nothing. Now, Jen was a little creeped out, so we tried to take our time in hopes the guy would be on his way. He just sat there doing nothing, not looking at a map, not looking at his phone, not even looking at us that I could tell, with his car running. Now, we couldn't waste much more time, given that the sun was about to go down, so we shrugged off the creepy guy and hit the trail. It was stupid and ridiculous to start out at the time we did, of course, and there are many things about this trip that I would do differently, trust me. Now, we hiked for a bit, past a trail shelter with 3 to 4 young guys and girls who seemed very normal and nice and said hi, and a ways down the trail, out of sight of the shelter, we noted that a potable water spigot was there. But we got maybe a mile in before I put my foot down and said, we need to make camp. It was near dark and had become difficult to see where the trail led. So we turned back to the campsite we'd just passed. Now, we could hear the highway traffic in the distance, so the spot wasn't at all peaceful. But we felt good about being near fresh water and also that we were within screaming distance of another group. So we scrambled to make camp and we got the tent up and went on a mad search for firewood in the dark. And for those of you that have never done a lot of camping, that's usually not the most fun thing to do. So she goes on to say that oddly, all the wood was wet, like it had rained, but we lived in the vicinity and it hadn't rained recently. Now, I'm excellent at quickly starting fires, but we struggled for a good hour trying to get a fire started because of all the nearby wood and kindling was wet. Now, our flashlight started to die during the hunt for dry enough wood, and of course, we didn't bring any extra batteries. So this is already going south, folks, as y'all can tell. With only a failing headlamp left, and having burned all of the toilet paper for lack of other fire starter, we managed to get a fire going, and then we breathed a sigh of relief. We got dinner going, cracked open this bottle of wine. It says it's Nalgene, or Nalgene, so you can imagine that, like a plastic water bottle full of wine, and settled in to relax and chill. We ate, we cleaned up, and then we headed to the tent. It goes on to say that we fooled around a bit and then headed to sleep. Now, sometime later, I woke up, not to a noise or anything, but to Jen, lying awake and very tense next to me. Now, sensing her alarm, I asked what was going on, but she told me in a freaked out voice to listen. So I listened, and I heard two things which I still do not have an answer for, but which set me on high alert. It was exactly that feeling that people describe of sudden internal alarm bells going off and knowing something's really wrong. First, there was a sound that resembled rocks being dropped from the top of a tree, hitting a bunch of branches on the way down, and it happened repeatedly. And we whispered urgently to each other, trying to rationalize it. "Maybe it's acorns," I said, praying it was just acorns. The other sound was more alarming. There'd been a period of silence, and then somewhere just beyond the perimeter of our campsite, we'd heard a thick branch snap. No rustling, no footsteps, no little twig snapping. And whatever it was had to be big, because those had to be quarter diameter branches by the sound of them. I kept trying to rationalize that it was a wild animal, but I've camped a lot. And I've spent a good amount of time outdoors, and the lack of rustling and other noises really freaked me out. The snapped branches weren't all coming from the same area. We were lying there in our tent, feeling like sitting ducks, straining to tell if someone was coming, hearing rocks being dropped through the trees in the silence, and then periodically a snap from a random direction. The hardest part to get across was the feeling of being there during this. It felt like the Blair Witch Project, terrifying and weird. The strangest thing to me was that the two dogs we had with us were completely silent the entire time. I was so scared at one point that I peeked out of the tent to make sure they were still there and that nothing had happened to them. And we then started discussing our total lack of weaponry, how stupid that was, and what we were going to do. Now, we agreed that it was far scarier to sit in our tent blind and that neither of us were going to be able to sleep now anyway. So we cautiously unzipped the tent, checked to make sure no one was around, and then we came out to sit. We sat outside, shared the remaining bottle of wine to calm our nerves, and waited for the sun to come up. The noises stopped. And once the sky started to lighten and hours had passed, things felt normal again, and it felt safe to go back to bed. We slept for a few hours, and the first thing I did when I got up was to look for acorns. I was really trying to rationalize what had happened, and I felt certain that I'd find oak trees around. Well, you know what? I searched around our campsite, all around it. There were no oak trees. We'd camped under a bunch of tall evergreens, but I didn't find pine cones or anything else that could be a likely explanation for what we heard. The snapping branches, I'd say animal, but why wasn't there any rustling? And if there was an animal around, why didn't the dog react at all? We didn't bother with fixing with food just because Jen just really wanted to get out of there. We broke down camp, gathered our gear and trash, and hightailed it out of there. It was such an intensely frightening, weird, and intense experience that it was all we talked about on the way home. Jen mentioned hearing about some AT murders, so the first thing I did when we got home was to get on the computer and start Googling. And I discovered that in 1986, a lesbian couple had been found murdered while camping the AT. I then found another lesbian couple had been murdered on the AT in 1996. And the year we went camping on the AT, all of these being in Virginia, and we had this same weird stuff happen in 2006. We just looked at each other wide-eyed. Crazy coincidence? Probably. But that was the final piece for us. Regardless of what happened, Jen said, I am never going camping on the Appalachian Trail again.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
What'd you think, homie?
Man, those are some cool stories.
It's wild, isn't it?
It is.
I still want to go look. I still want to go hike. I don't care about all the crazy stuff that's happened to people. I don't care about the eeriness and stuff. I still want to through hike it. I still want to do the Triple Crown. That's something that I want to go do. For anybody listening that likes to hike and all that, please email the show with... I'm looking at Gossamer gear packs. If y'all have any sort of heads up on anything like that, for a good pack, shoot me a message. Send it to the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, and just, you know, heck, put gear suggestions or gear tips or something at the subject line so that way I can have Mary send them to me because I want to read those things.
What is a Gossamer pack? Is that the brand?
It's the brand, Gossamer gear. It's a brand, yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. It's an ultralight pack. Instead of it having, like, it has, like, a super ultralight frame in it. Because right. When you go really light, you go frameless. So there's no rigidity. It's basically a bag with shoulder straps.
Right.
The problem is it can't hold a lot of weight. So as you go up, you can... That's why you see those packs that hold a lot of weight have the pack frames.
Right.
So they're made to stabilize all that stuff. Now, Kyle, you were talking about Luke wanting to go to the movies and ready to go see that and talking about Meg and something. And I remember we had talked a few shows back about us wanting to take Pop and take him to see the new Predator movie when it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's supposed to be, I believe, in September of this year. If I mentioned a fella's name, if I mentioned a man named Shane Black, does that name strike a chord with you?
No.
What if I mentioned a man named Rick Hawkins? Does that name strike a chord with you?
No.
Rick Hawkins was the role that Shane Black played in the 1987 film The Predator.
Okay.
Hawkins was the one telling the dirty jokes.
Yep, I remember that. Yep.
Okay, that was Hawkins. Hawkins is the man directing the 2018 Predator.
Oh, really?
Here's the reason why, folks. Because I was like, why does that... Hawkins wrote the film Lethal Weapon.
He did?
He wrote the film The Monster Squad, The Last Boy Scout, The Last Action Hero, The Long Kiss Goodnight. He also wrote
Edge. The guy
Edge.
That played Hawkins in that movie?
Yep.
Huh.
He also wrote The Nice Guys that had Russell Crowe in it. He also wrote and directed. He made his directorial debut when he did the movie Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, but he wrote and directed Iron Man 3. Which is like in the top 15 highest grossing films worldwide.
Yeah.
So this fella is coming in to do Predator, or The Predator now is what it's going to be called. So we got Hawkins back. Because remember, he's the one that gets wiped out and they're like, you know, Hawkins' body, and then he comes in and get him. Yeah.
They just find the gut pile.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, the Monster Squad, I remember that was a good, that was with Fred Savage, I believe. Back in the day, wasn't it? Wasn't he in that one?
I'm kind of remember where the kids form like a little gang.
Yes,
and they go in and they're killing Dracula, and then there's Frankenstein,
and the mummy, and the Frankenstein's good, and there's like the Wolf Man.
That's right,
and all that stuff. Yeah,
they let the Frankenstein into their clubhouse, their treehouse, and stuff.
Yeah. Had the old scary German guy. Remember that's what they call him, old scary German guy.
That's right. Man, yeah. That's a good movie.
Yeah, that's what you need. You need to get the kids to see that.
I think I want to say that me and the boys watched it a couple months ago.
Probably did. We've probably even discussed it. But I just thought it was interesting that I was, because I wanted to look up the Predator. I'm like, who's directing this? I've never heard of this guy. And when I went to doing research on him, I'm like, holy crap, I know that dude. Hey, here's something that's cool for all of those film buffs. When he also wrote Part 2, the Lethal Weapon 2.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't use it. And the reason they didn't use it is because the main character, Martin Riggs, played by Mel Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
When Shane Black wrote the story, Shane Black killed him off at the last of the show. And people that have read that adaptation said that's his best work to date, is that's how good the story was that he wrote. Apparently, Lethal Weapon 2 was supposed to be violent and very dark and then kill Martin Riggs off.
Yeah, but they knew they had a franchise on their hands that was making money.
I mean, blowing up.
So many great novels and stories like that have been changed. I remember, like, the TV show Lost. It started out really strong.
Yeah.
And everybody was, like, guessing what would happen. They were like, no, that's not what happened. And they kind of stretched it out, and then it ended up, the ending was exactly the way everybody thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Another TV series I could think of was True Blood, how they just kind of, it was really going good, and then they realized they had a hit on their hand, and so they kind of stretched it. I think they're even doing that with Game of Thrones now, because I think that's almost over, and I'm just like,
yep, it's almost done.
I do not know how they're going to wrap up so many storylines in one season. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're building this culmination of this great battle over 7 years.
Yes.
And then it's going to be over in like 2 episodes. You're like, what?
You're like, it can't be. No.
How can that be? I haven't seen the new Solo movie, but I've been seeing a lot of bad reviews about that thing.
I've had several friends. I haven't gone to see it yet.
Either,
I want to go see it. I think it's, I think if you go into it expecting too much, that's what you're going to get, is a kind of a letdown. But since Disney has bought out Star Wars, it's going to be, this is the way I feel, is, and I think I may have even said it before, is it feels like it's Pirates of the Caribbean in space.
But
that's kind of what they've turned it into.
Is it one of the same things where they know they got a hit on their hands, so they're kind of dragging it out, and in turn, they're ruining it?
Probably, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just a way. Well, the thing that they're going to have to do is get off of this storyline and use space still, but just make another storyline.
Right.
That's the way they're going to have to attack that and make it interesting. But yeah, folks, I hope you really enjoyed all the crazy stories. I hope you enjoyed whatever films that you're going to go watch. Like, I went and saw Deadpool 2. Yeah, that's what a stroke sounds like, ladies and gentlemen. I went and saw Deadpool 2, enjoyed that, but I haven't gone to see Solo. I will be going to see Meg. I'm not even sure what's out here recently. I need to go check on what that's got going on.
Jurassic Park's coming out June 22nd.
I'll have to go see that, I'm sure.
Yeah, so that's going to be really cool.
Yeah, that'll be here before we know it. So, yeah, we'll have to go jump on that one for sure. And then you've got a bunch of wild stuff coming up, because y'all have to pre-party Father's Day, so you're going to be out of town when the next when Father's Day actually gets here.
Yeah, we're going to be out of town. Next weekend we have the World Series tournament, I think Mansfield. So it's not too far away. It's about an hour away, so closer than Waco.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing that, and then I think we got two more after that, and then we're done for the summer. Well, I say that, but we have off for about 2.5 months, and then it starts picking up in the fall again. But still, it'll be nice to have that break.
At least it'll be better when it was like 115, 109 when we were out there in Waco on Memorial Day. That was a little warm.
Unbearable.
Yeah, that was a bit of a beating. But yeah, so we'll kick out another, let's see, we're going to do another Elite show, and then we're going to have some interviews coming up pretty soon. We're getting lucky with that stuff we got lined out. So hopefully we got some good ones. We can't tell you who they're going to be. Y'all go and read and research before we even get a chance to talk to them. Then it will be no fun for y'all.
Yeah, so, right. It kind of ruins it.
Yeah, so we're not even going to tell you. But we do have several interviews coming up.
I've had people actually email us before saying, well, like, you know, you didn't say what happens at the end of the book, you know, during the interview. And I'm like, well, if we give the whole book away, there'd be no point for you purchasing it.
Right.
You understand, it's like a promotion for you to go buy the book, right?
Yeah.
One of those kind of deals. Well, if you have any cool stories of your own you'd like to share with us, don't forget you can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can also call the show, 817-945-3828. Now, no one actually answers that. It's a voicemail. You'd have to leave your story for us to listen to. But if you feel like doing that and sharing with us, that would be awesome. Also, don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. If you're listening to this show, then you're only listening to 50% of the work we do. There's an entire back catalog, over 3 years worth, and you can have access to that for only $5. You got to go to the website, expandedperspectives.com, to sign up. Cam, what do you got for the rest of your week? Anything special?
I'm trying to think what I'm supposed to do. I don't remember. My wife's got me doing all kinds of stuff. I don't know. I'm going to try to squeeze in. We're going to try to squeeze in a little disc golf.
That's a
little
like
bit, but that's about it. I mean, other than that, I don't know. It'll probably just be working around the house, working on some things. My daughter went and did a bunch of stuff for her college classes to get all that stuff riled up so she can get going to it. So
you want
to
help me set up a pool?
I guess I'll be helping you set up a pool.
You are the water guy, so I could just have you come over and do the testing.
This is true. Right? This is very true.
I want it tip-top Magoo. I want it clear and clean.
I can handle that.
At all times.
Right? I can definitely handle that.
All right, folks. Everybody be careful out there. Till next time, I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
Use me.